Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
Money. We all want more of it. We dream about financial freedom, stability, and that feeling of peace when the month ends. But here's the uncomfortable truth. For many of us, it's not life that keeps us broke. It's us. The late night spending sprees we justify as treating ourselves, the forgotten budget we swore to stick to, the opportunities we're too afraid to take because deep down we don't feel ready or worthy. Self-sabotage. It's the hidden hand that derails even our best intentions. And until we understand why we do it, we will keep circling the same mountain of frustration, no matter how much we earn or how hard we work. And so tonight we're joined by someone who has made it her life's work to decode the emotional and spiritual patterns behind our financial behaviors. No stranger to the show, Vanyile Magwagwa, an author, speaker, and founder of Wealthy Money, who helps people heal their relationship with money from the inside out. So Vanyile, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. What's up?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you, Mpumi. Just getting over a flu like yourself.
Yeah.
I'm very happy otherwise.
We'll be good. We'll be good. All right. Before we talk about money habits and sabotage, let's talk about roots, because I know that's your favorite thing to tackle. What do you think is at the root of our tendency to undo our own progress when it comes to money?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with our loyalty to our family and our background. Ooh. There's something called a vow of loyalty, which is an unconscious vow that we make as children.
Yeah.
And actually, let me go start all the way back to the Stone Age, because this dates back to the Stone Age to truly understand it. So in the Stone Age, how did we survive? We survived by being in community. But think about it. Those of us that are here because we did, because our ancestors did not upset people and follow the rule and did not rock the boat unnecessarily. So in the Stone Age, people were not walking around and being like, I'm going to self-actualize and I'm going to find myself and I'm going to be the best version of me.
Unlike what we have today.
Exactly. Today we can talk about self-actualization and things like that.
Yeah.
But in the Stone Age era, it was like, that is your job is to go collect water. And that's what you're going to do. You know, if you didn't do it by sunset, then everything would fall apart. Right? Because everyone else is depending on you. And if you missed enough water days and stopped going for water, stopped helping with your chores, everybody else suffers. Why are you being kept in the tribe? It just makes more sense to leave you behind, right? So if you were too different from the tribe and decided to do your own thing, you got kicked out of the tribe. Now enter the developmental part of our brains, which is the emotional center, mainly the amygdala. That part did not evolve for the last 10,000 years. So it has kept all those emotional memories. We have evolved technologically, all those things, but the amygdala hasn't evolved. And what we learned in that time, and so it remembers that, that if I am different from the tribe, I will be kicked out of the tribe. So my best form of survival, because if you were kicked out of the tribe in the Stone Age, you most likely died unless you joined another tribe and then you had to emulate the rules of that particular tribe so you don't get kicked out again, right? So if I'm too different from my tribe, I am going to get kicked out and I'm going to die. So for most of us, being different from the tribe and not being loyal to our tribe literally feels unsafe and feels like imminent danger at a very physical level. And that's because of this part of our brain and the rules of society. So most of us, when we come from a particular background, say a background where we grew up poor and then we start making money, When we do start making money, we then have to actually sit down and make those subconscious, like bring all that subconscious stuff to the surface and accept that we will be different from the tribe, accept that people will talk, accept that, you know, we have to feel all that we will feel unsafe and work with those feelings of unsafety of having money and not feeling okay financially. The one way to overcome that is when you start to notice how people, when they become wealthy, start to chill with other wealthy people, right? You have now found a new tribe. And so it becomes easier to just then continue to build wealth because, well, I'm now with the new tribe. But if you're close to your family of origin and they are still struggling financially and they're not willing to move forward with you, it's going to be very challenging. You're going to have to walk that path, man, to find that balance. And it's often very challenging. Very few people can do it very well. You know? Yeah.
So essentially, the sabotage starts at our very primal conditioning.
At a very primal conditioning. This is why when people say, oh, you care too much about what other people think, that's your problem.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what makes you human. Like, this is why people buy, like, labubus for supermarkets. This is what makes, that is the human conditioning. There's nothing to be ashamed of. It's just important to understand that, wait, now I'm triggered because I don't want to lose my tribe of origin. And that, and when it comes to money, we will self-sabotage.
Yeah.
And you're more likely, the, how do I put this? The bigger your goal, from where you started off in childhood, the more likely you are to sabotage and basically do a yo-yo up, down until you try to figure that out, right?
That's crazy.
So you have to be very, very aware of that.
Sure. And I think with this question, you can unpack it a bit more because many of us know what to do. We know about saving, we know about investing, we know about budgeting, but we struggle to actually do it with all the knowledge. So what is happening emotionally or even psychologically in that space between knowing and doing?
Okay. So, I mean, I have answered these questions in so many ways. So if people are like, but in another episode, she said this.
Listen,
trauma is so layered. So today we're talking about the family aspects around loyalty. So if you come, so we're going to unpack this. And this is one of my favorite things of teaching the vow of loyalty and family dynamics, because actually at the core of my work, this is it, you know? And like this can take me years with a client to unpack because we are talking about what has kept humanity alive and kept you and your ancestors alive for 10,000s and thousands of years, right? So we're literally going against primal conditioning, as you've said. So if you come from a family where savings isn't a norm, remember, now you making it a norm again makes you an outsider in the tribe. I want you to understand that in the Stone Age, anything weird, like, wow, you now cook with a pot, whereas our people cook with, like, I don't know, foil or whatever. You know?
Vanilla, does this affect you even if the tribe doesn't know? Even if you do it in secret,
even if the tribe doesn't know. But I mean, think about it. Like, even now, when some people go to the village, right? Where, like, I come from a family where, like, when we do funerals and weddings and all those things, we just hire catering companies and hire a venue. People think that's so strange. But when I talk to other people who, like, do it the chop, like I say to people, I have actually never chopped or done anything for a funeral or a wedding in my family. We just, it's just not a thing that we do. So when people hear that, but it's like, but that's how our family does it. And it's like, but wouldn't it be easier to do it this way? No, but this is how our family does it. It's those kinds of things. You'll hear it even in the language that we use. But in our family, this is how we do it. You know, like, think about it. We don't always go for the easiest. We have many family traditions because When people explain to me, they go, Van, this is how our family does it, because in the kitchen, when we're chopping, all of that, we're all getting connected and we sit and we breathe together and we can talk. And I say, but in my family, we just come in and we can all sit with the grieving family and have tea and coffee with and just be at ease for the whole week without doing anything. And that's how we grieve. But we all have different nuances of that. Mm. So our minds collect all these little incidents of this is what makes us feel close. Mm. We can't imagine like that the other side could also work and also create that sense of community, that sense of closeness. So in a way, and I remember I thought it was just me until my clients started telling me this. When my clients would start paying off debt, and myself as well, when they started becoming debt-free, they would say something crazy to me and say, it feels like I am like going to not make it, like I will lose my life if I continue on the path of being debt-free. And it's so awesome to be able to say to them, oh, I've had that, and that was 10 years ago, and I'm still here. You're going to be okay. It's just your primal brain is saying it hasn't seen anyone else in your life, like most of your caregivers, be debt-free. So it doesn't know that you can continue to be alive and be debt-free. So this is why it feels like that. So it's the same with savings. So most of us don't understand and don't tune into our bodies. And even when we tune in, we don't know why we're reacting the way we're doing at a nervous system level. And then our subconscious mind interprets what's happening at a nervous system level and goes, this is not safe. Let's get rid of these savings. Let's sabotage. Let's energetically create emergencies. Your car breaks down when you get below a certain savings point. Things just happen. Why? Because you have never ever seen someone have that amount of money and continue to live, right? So your subconscious mind and your entire nervous system don't have that information. And what is unknown, they have then decided is completely unsafe. And worse, what if it separates you from your tribe and you end up alone?
And dying, you know? Because you've got no support.
And die, right? So like, and I've walked many clients through this, you know, and for me, this is why I think like one of the best things as a coach is being able to have gone through the journey yourself, because I can literally be like, oh, no, it's all good, guys. Like, I know it feels like the end of, wow, like you're going through it, hey, but you don't have to worry about this. You're going to be just fine. And they are just fine. But it doesn't feel just fine in that moment. And I really, like, I honor that because I know what that felt like for me when I was trying to get out of debt.
Vangina, let's talk about worthiness, a theme you often emphasize. How does feeling unworthy of abundance manifest in our financial lives, even when we're earning well, because we are working hard?
I don't know, you know, like over the last few months I'm going through an evolution where I'm wondering about worthiness and this concept of deservingness, and I'm just wondering if it's just another aspect of trauma and what I call the not good enough wound. So I've always associated those two things with not feeling good enough. So and also not truly understanding ourselves. So one of the things that I battled with when I just started on this money journey was like literally had to sit with this belief that I'm not worthy of money. And at the core of it was this belief that I am not good enough to have what is good in this world. You know, I'm not good enough for ease. And when I unpack that, I realized that a huge part of it was also this feeling of why should I get to have what my family never had? when I look at like what makes me so special. You get what I'm saying? Like when I look, I remember I would like think of my grandmother and like how she then would have to bail my uncle out on the 7th of every month, and how she was always so anxious of my uncle getting rid of money and things like that. And I just felt like my grandmother struggled to find that peace because she always knew that she'd have to bail out my uncle at some point. So I thought, so then I had to, instead of working with worthiness, was almost working with my family history of around the feeling that if they could not have it, they being my uncle, my mom, my dad, my grandmothers, then I shouldn't be able to have it. And that was at the core of my feeling of a quote unquote worthiness. So I had to literally give myself permission to thrive where they couldn't. And that meant literally grieving their pain, you know? I remember it was so challenging. There was one year when I decided to go all in this work, and I cried for a whole month straight for my grandmother and what I had seen her go through financially, my maternal grandmother. And I remember getting my period 3 times in that month.
In the month?
Yes, 3 times, because we carry a lot of these memories in the womb, you know, and I was just crying. Like I couldn't stop crying. And this was, and I remember this because it was also the time when my business broke. There was this one time where I made more in a month than I'd ever made in a year working at Stellenbosch University. And it kind of blew my mind, and it threw me off kilter in a way that I could never imagine. And that's what started this process of grieving. Because, I mean, at the core of it, it feels like, why the hell do I get to have this when they never got to have it? And how is this possible that in 1 month you get to make this when others don't even, when it takes a year for people to make this?
Yeah.
You know, what the hell is happening in my world? And that process required me really unpacking this concept of unworthiness and deservingness. And as I went deeper into it, was this belief that if others couldn't have this, then I shouldn't have this, especially the ones that I loved, because it's unfair. And the way that, and I think I've seen this with clients as well. Yeah. So the way that I remain loyal. So it all comes back to this tribal thing, right? And our families and our tribe. It's like the way that I remain loyal to them and that I honor their struggle and I honor their pain is I go through the same pain and I go through the same struggle. And I showcase to the world that actually they were not wrong in holding these beliefs. Because it felt to me like when you make money, and then you make money at that level, then it feels like you're basically throwing everything back in their faces and saying, well, I get to thrive and they didn't. So I mean,
and almost like, well, how couldn't you, how, why didn't you get here? Or what was so difficult for you?
Right. What was so difficult for you? Why couldn't you do it? So there were so many layers about with that. So I had to give myself permission to grieve my grandmother and to accept that in her presence I had co-regulated to her nervous system and her, right? And I don't talk a lot about my grandmother, but my maternal grandmother I called mama, and my mom I've always called by name. So she was like really my connection to like motherhood, to everything. She was like, I think as with most Black women, like our grandmothers are like so much. They are our everything, you know? So my grandmother was that. And so just having to grieve that. And for the longest while, I was doing a lot of my mother wound, father wound stuff. Couldn't understand why it wasn't clicking until I started realizing and sitting with that actually it wasn't just unworthiness. It felt like my success didn't feel quote unquote worthy because it felt like a slap in the face to my grandmother for having struggled when I got to have it quote unquote easier.
And speaking on that, emotional safety. How does emotional safety or the lack thereof determine then how we handle our money, especially for those of us who come from financial instability?
So, how emotional safety works, right, is if I feel emotionally safe, then I can feel more regulated within my nervous system,
Okay.
right? But the thing is, you can have grown up with emotional safety, but not have grown up with financial safety. Like your parents could have given you emotional safety, but they could not have given you that financial safety. And in a weird kind of way, it makes breaking out of this loyalty pattern even harder in that case,
Sure,
because
sure,
you're less
sure.
likely to, I not even just less likely to identify it, but it's that you will be even way more loyal to the tribe, you
Yeah.
know, because you feel like you don't want to leave them behind because they are
Yeah.
such a source of emotional safety. And one
Yeah.
thing I want to make very clear, guys, is that you can grow financially without leaving your family behind.
You
You know,
can.
you can up level without leaving your friends behind. You don't, your friends and your family may never get to your financial level, but it doesn't mean you have, like, you will suddenly be a different person. It also means what I have seen for myself is that you can show up for family members in ways that they could never. Like, I was one of the first people that gifted my aunt a flight and a trip all over Cape Town. My aunt has worked so hard as a teacher. She's gifted people flights, everything. She never could do it. She never did it
For
for herself. Not like,
herself.
you know? So with me, I was like, yo, and she always goes like, Van is the first person that got me on a flight. We came to Cape Town, gave her a 2-week vacation. People couldn't believe my aunt was always one of those people up early at the crack of dawn. People would call and like literally 11 a.m. I'm like, oh no, she's asleep. We'll call you when she wakes up. We're going to a winery today. You know, you get to open, you can get to gift family incredible experiences, your parents, all of that. So you don't have to leave people behind. Resources give you access to do so much for the people you love. I continuously see this in my life. But
I love
when you're
that.
going through this at an emotional level, so understanding that you didn't have emotion, you had emotional safety, but you didn't have financial safety. One, I said it could have its cons, but it also has a huge pro. I like someone who has never known emotional safety. When you encounter nervous system dysregulation, you're able to notice that you are dysregulated when it comes to money. You may not have the tools, but then you can start to notice, wait, having money is dysregulating me. Why? Because I know what what a regulated nervous system feels like, which means you can go get the help that you need in order to start regulating yourself at a deeper level. Right? So, and I think that is a huge thing. And what you have learned in your family around emotional regulation, you can start to apply some of those things into finances, right? And if you have an emotionally regulated family, it's easier to have a conversation around money and sharing some of these things and then hearing their feedback. Because some of the things is that you just have them in your mind that this is how these people will react if I have money. Right, because that's again the primal thing that dates back 10,000 years ago. So it's not even yours. It's probably something, it's something that we as all, I want everyone to understand this, that all humans carry this, right? The loyalty to the tribe, all humans across races. I work with people from all walks of life. I work with trust fund babies. I work with people in the UK, the US, Hong Kong, everywhere, we all carry this. This is what makes us human. So just understanding, wait, I carry this human thing. If you come from an emotionally regulated family, you can bring some of these beliefs to the table and ask, how would you guys react if this happens? And then just hear them out and see what they say. And nothing will shift you faster than literally talking it through with those people. Yeah. Now, if you come from an emotionally dysregulated family and black tax is a thing, and this exercise will probably cause you more harm than good, right?
But if
you come from an emotionally regulated family and you grew up in a place where the adults know how to emotionally regulate, you guys take time to talk, you can bring your deepest subconscious fears and beliefs to the table, to family meetings, and help people work through things with you and have hear what they say so that you can hear that, oh, my beliefs around leaving them behind or being excluded from the tribe or having more pressure put on me, those are false and I can let them go. Right? So that is a blessing. It's a huge blessing. You're already way ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Oh, love it. Self-sabotage, I found, often shows up subtly in overspending, procrastinating, ignoring our statements like you always tell us to. What are some of the more invisible ways we sabotage our financial growth without even realizing it?
Wow. So one thing is, I've been thinking a lot about this one, because I've been meeting a lot of aware entrepreneurship at events where I've been speaking. It's basically refusing to invest in our own growth. So it's a subtle thing. So because society praises us for this, right? Is that you start to grow financially, but you are not able to acknowledge your growth and keep investing and going to the next level. So you basically keep playing as though you are still at the lower levels. I don't know if that makes sense, as though you're still starting out.
Okay.
And so you're not able to access certain services. You're not able to access certain support that will help you grow faster, up level faster, all of that. So we sabotage in that way. And it's like we refuse to spend money to get the support that we need. You level up levels and you spend everything on, you keep spending in the same old way and you're saving in the same old way for dear life. You're not able to access, you refuse to access the coaches that will help you up level. You refuse to access the advisors, the estate planners, all of those things. You're just not doing any of that. So that is still a form of sabotage, right? Yeah. And I think that's the most subtle one that I've been having more and more interesting conversations with people around that. And I'm absolutely loving that that is that people are starting to notice that, wait, I have a problem.
And what's the fear there?
The fear is losing money. So the greatest fear is that if I spend on support, then I'm going to lose money. And that's also because you haven't been around enough people that are making, again, you're refusing to leave your old environment that has to reflect where you've grown to. So you're not having conversations around how, like, as I have up-leveled, like, you're not having conversations around, like, if I get support, that level of support, and I pay for it, it's going to make me X amount in a few months or a few years, you know? People don't, like, there comes a point where when you grow, you need to surround yourself with a different type of person, not just your old people. And you need to go and find a different network as you keep your old networks as well. You know, you need to find yourself different types of support systems. So you sabotage yourself by basically you're growing, but you insist on shrinking yourself to other, to the old level. And I don't think we have enough, we have enough conversations around that.
That
you
is
know?
Scary to me. That is so scary to me. You know, when I think about it, we've been talking about self-sabotage, but I don't think it's gotten scary, or it was scary thinking about it or talking about it until this moment, because it's getting clearer and clearer to me what it really is. It is refusing to grow. That's what it is. At the heart of it, it's just refusing to grow. And I'm imagining a kid whose body is developing and they are doing everything it takes to stop themselves from walking, to stop themselves from talking, to stop their bodies and their bones from growing. That's the image I have in my mind of a child literally stopping themselves from what is naturally going to happen because of the stage they're in.
Exactly.
That can't be safe. And thinking about it,
But we think it's safe, right?
Yeah, and this is what I wanted to get to, because we're trying to protect ourselves. It's all an act of self-preservation. But I do want you to talk about how does it then look on the other end? When we have self-sabotaged, what are the ramifications of refusing to grow as the stage warrants us to grow? What normally happens?
Okay, so the ramifications when we are refusing to grow, right, is that there's only one thing. What happens with a child that refuses to grow? They get, it's like arrested development type vibes. So, I mean, you just, and what happens is you keep repeating the same cycles over and over and over again.
So
you will start noticing that, wait a minute, like I've been here so often, and I'm repeating the same cycles over and over again. And when it comes to money, you'll find yourself unable to break through beyond a particular money set point. Because, I mean, your growth requires you to basically get out of your little fish tank, go into the ocean, and be able to swim freely. So when you're not doing that, you start to get arrested development. You find yourself having the same conversations. And most people don't realize that that's also a sign that growth is not happening. You're having the same conversations. You're feeling bored of your life, right? You've lost that zest for things. Things feel like, I already know what this person's going to say. I already know how this is going to play out. All of that, you don't feel stretched. So it's just, you do what Paulo Coelho says, which is you live the same day 60 years for every day for 60 years. So it's really, really sad. And I think what often happens, though, is that we become, because we are human, you can find yourself getting very resentful. You start to resent people. And not only that, there's something really interesting that happens in it at an energetic level when you try to keep yourself at the levels of where, in a place where you have outgrown yourself. People, I guess this comes back, this is the only time I'm going to talk about frequency, guys. But it really is the one thing that like makes sense when you think about this. It's almost like your frequency has gone up. You're now like at a 500, whatever frequency people talk about when they talk about frequency. And everyone else is at a 400 frequency. You're no longer meeting each other there. Those people will start to resent you and hate you, because it's almost like no matter what you're talking, you are not matching each other at that level. So here's an interesting example of this. When sometimes with my clients, when they come to me and they talk to me and they're like, oh, I started a business, nobody's buying, etc. Then I find they'll now ask him, how much are you charging for your products and services? Then they'll tell me, and it will usually be a lowball offer. Then I'll say to them, increase your pricing. And only then they'll be shocked how many bookings and they start getting, you know,
sure.
how many people start buying with them. And they're like, but what happened? I thought nobody could afford. And I'll always say to them, it had nothing to do with it, the fact that like you were pricing and speaking to a different audience, and that audience couldn't see you and hear you because you were at different levels.
Sure.
Right? The audience at your level would pay more for that, and like they expect that. So if you were talking to them and you were charging that price, they cannot hear you, they cannot see you. They don't take you seriously.
Crazy. And you mentioned the fish tank and the sea, and I'm thinking, when your body is, I'm thinking of a fish, when the fish's body keeps growing and growing and growing, at some point they are not the ones who are choosing to stop growing. The tank forces them to no longer grow. So I'm just wondering at what point or how many times we'd need to self-sabotage until we're no longer making the decisions, because the tank is the one that's now saying there's no way you're going to grow. And we're shaped. I'm imagining a fish being shaped in the shape of the tank because there's just no longer room to grow.
And then the fish believes that that's the whole world and that that's actually their true shape. Right? Because I think that's literally what happens. We start to believe that that is our shape and that is the whole world.
How do we break this pattern for good?
The way that we break this pattern is we start to do our inner work around trauma. I mean, it's so much more layered. Like today, I barely spoke about looking at your bank accounts because the work on vows of loyalty has nothing to do with looking at your bank account.
Sure.
You know, it has a lot to do with understanding you. It's got a lot to do with family dynamics. And some of the work that I do with that is a lot of meditation work, where like I take you back to working with the inner child, the inner teen, like family scenarios, family dynamics, understanding those patterns. But the other thing that I think is not spoken about enough is literally finding another tribe. So, you know, I think most people think that you can only have like these friends, like the friends that you have, you know, the work relationships that you have. But we are human. You can have as many little groups and things as your heart desires, you know, like how you have, like how I have my yoga group where like all I talk about is yoga. I have my travel nomad tribe where all I, whenever I talk to them, it's like, where are you in the world? Oh, I'm here now. What's this? Like, you have to find a different tribe. So like you have to find a money tribe, and sometimes you have to pay your way into those spaces, you know. So you may have to find, if you want to grow financially, you may have to find a money mastermind, you may need to find a money coach who is doing what you're doing at a level that you aspire to. So another thing that people do is that they get people, they, when I say get a money tribe, people go and they go, I'm going to form a tribe with my friends, Ganjani, because those friends have the same, you guys are co-regulated to the same nervous system.
Yeah.
So you're setting the same goals. You're thinking about money in the same way. You want to be in rooms where you now have a new tribe. So basically, we're working with the amygdala when we do this, right? Yeah. Because remember, humans are tribal, no matter what they try to tell you with individualism and things like that. Yeah. So one of the quickest hacks is to say, well, if I now belong to this new little group and new tribe, and they have literally normalized making lots of money or investing, then it doesn't feel weird when I'm on this journey. So what often happens, you'll start to notice that, wait, you start to pick up their behaviors. You start to think about money in the same way. You start to move in the same way. Why is that happening? Because now your nervous system is like, oh, I won't get kicked out. Like, there's another tribe here. If I do get get kicked out of this one, I'll have this one, you know? And then if you feel like you're outgrowing that one, go to the next one. And that's why I say, like, sometimes you may need to pay for those for access to that. You know, you may need to pay for the mastermind. You may need to pay for the coaches. You may need to pay to be in those spaces so that you can grow at that level. When I started, when I had that month, the first month ever where I was like, oh my God, I made more than I ever did in a year in a job, was like, for me, granted, I've only had a job for 18 months in my whole adult life, but it was still like, it was like, wow, you know, it was because I was in a mastermind, right? And I was working with them, and they were normalizing so many crazy things for me that it was just my nervous system just normalized and said, wow, this kind of money is just normal now. And then when I felt ready this year, I joined another mastermind, right? And then I started working with other coaches. So what you want to do is you want to hack the amygdala, the nervous system, all of those things. One of the fastest hacks is that. This is why they say, like, show me your five friends, right? And then I will tell you who you are and where you are on this journey. So just go into different spaces. And even if you're scared and you're feeling ashamed, all of those things, it's okay. Like, just commit to be there for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then just start to see how it impacts you at a nervous system level.
Yeah. And then these last 2.5 minutes that we have, I don't know if you'll be able to do this, but I think you can. I want us to talk about abundance, but not as a number, as a state of being. What does true abundance look like to you, at least? And how can we all then begin to embody it even before the numbers change?
I mean, abundance is different for everyone, right? I think it's very subjective. But for me personally, I feel like abundance is spaciousness, you know? I feel like abundance is spaciousness, and it's time freedom. It's the ability to control my time and to do with my time what I want. For me, that has, from the time I was a child, that was always one of the biggest issues that I had with adulting, I think. It was like, I would look at adults and they would always be rushing from one thing to the next. They would be all these things. And I never ever looked and thought, I want to sit in traffic. There's a friend of mine who was always like, going to a DCT, can't wait to go back to Joburg so that I can get a job and sit in traffic. I just want that experience. I was like, never wanted that, right? So I think for me, abundance is the ability to control my time, to have spaciousness in the day, to nap if I need to nap, to do like I did the last few days, if I'm feeling sick, to sleep throughout the day, to move things around, to be able to control my own destiny. I think for me, more than anything, it's that. And never to have to worry about, like, oh my gosh, where is my food coming from? Like, am I going to have a roof over my head? It doesn't mean that I have to have the very most in terms of, like, money, but it does mean that, like, I have to feel like I'm living life on my own terms, and I have the space to be present and enjoy my life. Because I think that you can, like, be making a lot of money, but the way that you're making a lot of money is you're trading so much time for your life that, like, it feels like sometimes that life is passing you by.
You've said a mouthful, but that is not a new thing. That is not an anomaly. It's always so enlightening speaking to you, because it makes one really think about what they've endured. And I'm using that word endured because we've gone through life. We've just gone through it. It's not even realizing what is happening to us. And so it's always very enlightening. It gets us to think about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how we can do better. So thank you so much for coming through yet again. Can't wait for our next chat.
Oh, thank you so much, Mpumi. This was amazing. And thank you so much to the listeners as usual.
Cheers.
Cheers. Yes.
If you were listening very closely to this conversation, you'll realize that what Vanile reminded us of is that money doesn't just expose our financial habits. It reveals our emotional patterns. That how we earn, how we spend or save often has less to do with logic and so much more to do with the stories we've believed about ourselves and our tribe. Maybe that's the real journey of wealth, hey? Not just learning how to manage money, but learning how to manage the part of us that don't yet believe we deserve it. Maybe tonight's takeaway is this, that you can't budget away self-doubt and you can't spreadsheet your way out of shame, but you can heal. You can rewrite the story. And when you do, your bank account will start reflecting what your soul has already decided that you are worthy of more. This has been Personal Finance Monday. I am Unompumelelo Mbonani, and I hope you have just made sense of your business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., and make sense of your money. Thank you.